Hi, everyone.
Hey there.
So my name is Phil Hack. I work at GitHub. And today we're going to be talking about advanced Git topics and sort of problems, issues that we run into, how to resolve them, different techniques for using Git, and some of the even the disagreements that we have, such as merge versus rebase or squashing or no squashing. So why don't we go around and we'll introduce themselves to you, and we'll go from there.
OK, I'm Giovanni Bassi. I'm from the Codecracker car team.
I'm James Montemagno. I'm a developer evangelist at Xamarin, working on several open source projects and plugins.
Hi, my name is Walter Montes. I am Microsoft MVP from Costa Rica.
And I'm James Chambers, a Microsoft MVP from Canada.
Great. So why don't we get started? We were just talking about whether you should squash commits when you're giving pull requests to a open source project. And I want to hear what you have to think about that.
So first, what is a squash, right? So a squash is when you have like several commits and you turn them into one or two commits. You can decide how many you want, right? So maybe you commit a lot, right?
So my goal is normally when I'm introducing or even fixing a bug or introducing a new feature, I'll usually branch. So this is my feature branch. And then I'm literally always committing.
Always be committing.
Right. Always be committing. And I do this so I can roll back easily. If something goes wrong, I just go back a little bit, because you never know when you're going to break code.
It's like save points in your game, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like that autosave feature, you know? It's like, I'll always be, you know, that. And for me, it's important because it's also the readability of what did I change and why. And I think always be committing with good comments is what you could expand this on.
Right. Yeah.
So you can read back.
And remember, right?
And I should have fit down there, but well, next time. Yeah.
And I think the problem here is now when that big, all those commits come in, you're literally going to have a bunch of commits adding to your master.
Right. So for what the approach that I like to take anyways, and we were talking about it earlier, the idea is that there's going to be, I think, logical groupings of commits, you can call it, I think, where maybe I don't need the 27 commits that I've made in the last day, but I might need 3 to kind of be representative of the work that I was doing, and I want the opportunity to put those comments together as well and make something that does make sense for whoever's going to be accepting the pull request.
Yeah, so that's the squash, right? So you have several commits, and you want to reorganize that. You can even reorder. So the technical name would be an interactive rebase, right? So you go rebase and you ask for a starting point. So I want to work on these commits from this starting point, and then you can reorder them and squash them, which is basically turning all these commits into just one commit and not the other part in another commit. So you can do that, and that if you do that, and you can use your previous descriptions, right? You don't lose that. Mm. You might want to disregard. You have that option.
Adding a file. Okay. Yeah, I can let that comment go.
Right? Or if you're removing something, you can remove a commit also. Mm. And then when you go to a pull request, and that helps the maintainer understand what you're trying to do, right? So they see the logical order
without a lot of work, a lot of extra work from the maintainer and the developers, because you have to know what every commit does and then try to
right and this is a pain. So if you don't, for the person organizing the work, it's really simple, right? So if you don't reorder anything, you just squash, and Git's gonna take care of it. Yeah. So you order it to do what you want. You fix some descriptions if you want to, and then it's just gonna happen for you. If you reorder something, you might have conflicts, you know. But if you don't, it's just gonna happen by like magic. And this is also really easy if you wanna rebase, right? Because if you have like 27 commits, and you wanna, and you are behind for some reason, right? And you now cannot automatically merge this pull request. So the maintainer might come to you and say, "Hey, I cannot merge that because there's a conflict. So would you please fix that?" And if you have like a lot of commits, you're gonna have to fix the. You might have to fix the conflict several times, right? So if you squash them before you rebase, then it's going to be much easier for you.
And I thought of a scenario really quick, is that often I'm implementing a new feature and I'll commit something, and then I realize that there was a bug introduced. So I actually, instead of undoing that commit, I may have worked on something else. Yeah. So I just fix it. But now if I'm going through those commits, like I pull this pull request and you're like, oh, I changed this file, and then 5 commits later I change it back because I broke something. Really, you just kind of want to not undo a bunch of stuff, but you could squash those together, and then Git essentially will diff what is actually correct.
That's so, another way to use it, but from the perspective of the developer, not from the maintainer.
For the developer.
So the maintainer would never see that.
We're throwing out a lot of terms here, and I think that perhaps a demo would be in order, like really quickly. And if we don't like it, we can always edit it out of the video later. But what I'm going to do here is close PowerPoint here and bring up my shell. And that is not. I know what I need to do. This is fun. Let's duplicate.
Yay.
Okay, and
it works.
Let's see. Here's the GitHub shell, and here's, so I have cgit, and here you can kind of see this new branch. There's head. The important thing is what I'm going to do here is, so you mentioned squashing and all that, and you mentioned rebase and interactive rebase. So the command for interactive rebase, I don't know if people are going to be able to see that well enough. Let's see. Sorry about that. Edit point. Let's edit that.
From now to.
From now to. Let's try 18 and hope that looks.
I'm gonna remove the transparency.
And go.
Okay.
Now.
Okay.
Okay. So
that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. You might be blocking it, but we'll try it, and if it doesn't work,
they can put the whole screen up there.
Oh, that's right. They're getting this. So, so for example, you might do git rebase dash I. Which is for interactive master, right?
And it can, so for everyone, so the interactive, what does that do for us? If I didn't put the dash I, just for anyone.
So if you didn't do the dash I, I would attempt to do an automatic rebase. And what rebase means, this is one of those concepts that a lot of people get afraid of when they're approaching Git.
Sounds scary.
It does sound scary, yeah. So what it does is that it's going to read every commit on the branch you're on and try to replay that commit, almost like redo what you did. That's why you often hear fast-forwarding or replaying history. It's going to redo those commits on the branch that you specify. So
on the commit you specify, it could be on a tag.
Oh, it could be anywhere, right. But so, for the sake of this, we're going to do it on to master. That's a common one.
So you are changing history, right? Let's make this really clear. And this is really dangerous.
Just to clarify, sure. So just to clarify here, you were likely on master already, and now you've switched over to a new branch called new branch, which we're seeing on the console there. And now you've made a bunch of changes, and now you're trying to... you made a bunch of commits, and now we want to change the state of our history in some way.
So imagine that upstream, somebody pushed a change to the origin, right? So you brought that back to your computer, and you are behind. So you branched, you were on top of the head of master, right? Now master is here, and you have to be here, right? So this is what he would do just now.
So here, just to simulate that, I'm going to make a commit to master, and then we're going to switch back to new branch.
So this commit is like somebody else did it, right?
Yeah, so we could imagine, add dash A, and test, and then git checkout with new branch. You notice when I hit tab there, I get that tab completion. That's a thing with PoshGit. It's really nice.
Yeah,
that's
nice.
So let's go back to here, and we can see that.
You didn't check it out.
Git checkout new branch. I have the git LFS smudge filter. Okay.
Just remove it. Git config.
Yeah. Okay. Git EC.
Embarrassing.
I know. Now you can see how much I have. Yeah. There we go. I was trying to think of the command to do that, but this is way easier. Thank you.
Way easier.
This is why we pair program. Okay. Especially me, because I make a lot of mistakes, especially when I'm demoing. I have a bit of a reputation for this, so that's why you guys are here to help me. Okay, great.
There we are. So we're on the branch.
If you're trying to understand what's going on here, this is a head is pointing to where we currently are, and we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 commits on this branch. We have 2 commits on master. And what we want to do is, hey, I'm ready to submit this pull request, but I've been committing all this random stuff together. What I'd like to do is group them into logical commits that sort of tells the history of what the work I did. And sort of the history of the work that I want you to pull in is different from what I actually did, right? So if I, added a method and I removed the method, you don't need to see all those intermediate steps. What you want to see is sort of the logical grouping of the changes, like especially if I'm fixing 2 bugs in there or something like that. So what we do is we type git rebase dash I master. So master is the branch I want to target.
Because we're on new branch currently with all the different commits.
Right. And so here you can see that it pulls up Notepad and it shows the, once again, up the font, go real big, there you go. And so this interface kind of scares people. It's like, what is going on here? Why do I have to edit a Notepad file? In a way, it's like a console, right? It's showing you what commands you can run. And so to squash a commit, all I have to do is edit this line. So I can say, well, 8137319, I'm going to put S, or I can spell it out, squash. And so that's going to merge that commit into that commit and make it a single commit.
And use the description message. So.
Yeah, and use a description message. You can also use what I call fixup, which I use often.
Yeah.
And what that'll do is that will allow you to change the commit message. So let's actually close this. And the way this runs is when you close it, it'll start to, notice here it says rebase in progress, right? So it's starting to replay those commits against master. And here this says nothing to commit, so I'll just commit dash dash allow empty. Or we can do continue.
So this happens when a commit completely removes some other commit, like when you revert. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now it's saying, I have nothing to do here. So he's saying, just go ahead.
Yeah, go for it.
I don't care.
Exactly. So we're going to do git rebase continue to say, well, we don't want an empty commit. Like, that doesn't make any sense. So we'll just continue with the rebase. So now it's going to go through the next, keep playing these commits. And here you notice that the commit dialog launched up. And that's because we did the fix up. And so it's showing me the first commit message, the second commit message. And I can just edit this and I can say, you know what, I want to combine these messages or do whatever I want. And then I save it, I hit close the document, and it's going to continue to replay.
Now there's a lot of semantics about, or I shouldn't say semantics, but the order that those things appear in that file are important. It's like it's going to use those as instructions in order to rebase our history and to change the way that those commits either appear or whether or not they appear.
Yeah, and if you remove a commit from that line, the code's gone.
It's gone. It's gone. That's right.
Yes.
Okay. That's why you have to make a lot of tests before doing this.
Right. So notice here that this is showing yellow. So you guys know what yellow means, right? This means if I try to push this, something bad's going to happen. And what's going to happen?
It's going to be denied. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, well, so I have another error. I may have deleted that repo back on the site.
Yeah.
But the yellow is telling us that we've rewritten history and that we'll have to force push it to get it up. So who wants to talk about force pushing?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, one of the things that I've run into a fair bit is, I've done this rebase and now I want to share my code, push it back up to the repo, but I'm left in this state where I've actually altered my history because the commits that were there are no longer there. I've actually remove them entirely from the history. Now I'm pushing them back up. So this is a problem though, right? Because other people could have already pulled down those commits and now we're going to be in a bad state. So I mean, at that point, we have a lot of options to kind of proceed from there and we'll probably get really complex really quickly. But if I'm in this state and I do indeed want to push back up to the repo, then I have to do a force push. So I do the dash F when I do my push and then up go my commits and it rewrites the history and everything disappears.
Yeah, okay. And as a rule of thumb, we never, ever force push to a canonical branch like master.
Master, yeah.
Right. So because people are pulling from it. And if you do that, you are going to cause a lot of trouble and a lot of pain, so don't.
Yeah.
So you can do that only to your own branches that nobody else is using, right?
Yeah.
And that's why, in general, we're always working, to me, it was always master should be kind of ready to go. At any time, we could hit publish, and that should be able to shippable code, essentially. So when we're working out of this, that's why you never force, and it actually looks pretty bad when people force, because you really can make some changes in there. So working in these feature branches are so important because now you're still in your feature branch of new branch and you could kind of go back if you needed to and do some changes essentially.
So what do you think?
One quick thing I wanted to point out is that you can actually now, the graphics here are not so great, but you can prevent force pushing to master now on GitHub. So if you go to your repo settings.
Oh, very nice.
And you choose a branch and I'll say master. So this is octakit.net. I'm actually doing this live. I probably should talk to the other maintainers before I do this. It's recommended, but I'm just going to go ahead and do this, and we'll yellow that, and then, there we go. And then, So now, like, nobody can force push the master, but you can force push to your other branches. Now, if you do a rebase on commits that you have not pushed, then you can do anything. You can go ahead and rebase to your heart's content, make that look nice, and then push it up to share. But once you push it, it becomes a real problem if you force push if you're collaborating with people on that branch. Now, if it's your own fork, you probably know that people are not going to be bothered by it. But if it's a shared branch, then you generally don't want to force push, or you want to do it very carefully with coordination with everyone else on your team.
Yeah, exactly. Since that is so dangerous, I believe, because you can change the history. I think that's, well, in the team that I have been working, it's forbidden to use a squash because of that. Because if you don't do it in the right way, you can affect the whole team.
You know what you can do, and it's much safer, is this thing that just happened. Like my local branch is different from my remote branch. So before you do a squash, you push it, right? So if you do something wrong, you can always delete your local branch and pull it back, right? So you don't lose it. There are other ways.
At least the history and everything.
Yeah. So there are several ways to get back, even without pushing to the remote. Git allows you to recover damage you've done.
Yeah.
You don't really lose it like that. There are ways. But if you just push it and then you do something wrong, just pull it back, right?
Yeah.
So you are safe.
Well, what about a scenario that you might want to force push? Like, what happens if you commit sensitive information in your GitHub repo? So,
First thing is change your keys.
Change
your password, first thing, right?
Yeah. Even in private branches, I'm not always working in public branches, and you never really want to commit keys. And so that, I work in a lot of demo projects, so I say, like, here's how you set up keys, for instance. Here's the website you go to, like, say, Twitter or something like that. Or even, like, GitHub, like, hey, you need to set up this key. For instance, even in private branches, I leverage, like, gitignores any of the files, make sure nothing of my Azure
use
publishing
environment
profiles.
Use variables instead of putting them into your...
Right. Yeah, and even in private ones, I don't do it because I'm always, even sample code, this is a good one, I might make it public later. But that's in my commit history that I've actually published keys to that. So essentially, even if I'm in a private one, something goes completely wrong, there's got to be a way to go back to completely remove it. And the first step is change all your keys immediately. Because it's just like putting it out there, like telling your best friend your password.
I think someone just did a demo where they pushed an AWS key and they timed how long it took before that was being used to mine Bitcoin. That's basically what they're stealing it for. And so people are scouring GitHub and looking for these keys. And so you want to avoid pushing them there. And also, just not a lot of people realize who are new to Git that when you clone a repo, you get the whole thing. So everyone on your team now has a copy of that key on their local machine. And are they following proper security procedures, this and that? If you put it in an environment variable only on the machine that needs it, then that's also like security in depth, right? You're keeping it restricted in that one place.
Even if it's a private repo, and somebody clones it, and then their machine is stolen, you know, now your key is in somebody else's hand, right? So they might use it.
So, you know, one thought that you mentioned is like, okay, it's also in my history. I might overwrite it, but anyone could go back in time and look at the history and see some keys. So I was in a situation where we had a project, you know, the GitHub for Visual Studio, and we're like, hey, let's open source it. And it's like, we didn't think about that when we started it. I mean, I had an idea we would, but I didn't know we'd get approval. So so now what do we do? What would be a technique to get rid of it from the history other than like starting a brand new repo?
That's true. Also, even just in that fact, often you may be working in a private branch in this long, long project. You want to do a V1. You might have written some comments or written some code that you know you don't want exposed anyways because you've changed a lot for V1. In either instances, you kind of want to go back to the beginning of time and say, this is fresh, here it is. Yeah. This is our new starting point, for instance.
Yeah.
So there's a few ways that we could go around that. And James, you seem very excited to chime in on this.
Oh, no, just that I had experience running into that as well. And there are ways that you can go back and edit the long tail of the history and go back and actually change an early commit very early on. But you're going to be faced with that same issue that now you are rewriting history all the way through and all your commits are different and things like that as
This is always going to happen.
Yes.
So change it.
But one of the commands you might run is like git filter tree if you really need to remove something from the history. But it's rewriting history. You need to coordinate with everybody.
Yeah.
And then after that, remember to run git gc because as we all know, git is immutable. And that means even if you undo or reset a commit, it's still in the tree until you collect the garbage. And a lot of times people will do something and they'll be like, oh no, I lost this commit, it's gone. Like what do I do? And 99.99% of the time, it's still there. And like, you know, you guys have techniques for recovering that commit.
Anyone? What do you mean, to recover?
Yeah,
to
ref log.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was like teeing it up so you guys could like. You're like, is that a trick question? I'm like, no.
Git ref logs is very advanced thing, right? So you.
Well, this is advanced Git topic, so let's do that.
You should look it up before you do it.
Just like filter tree,
look it up.
I'm not going to explain how to use it. Yeah.
Also, if you're doing PowerShell. Depending on how you do it, you know, PowerShell might interpret what you might have to put things between quotes because the at is interpreted, so you have to be careful.
I like to set up a whole different Git repo to just try some things on first. Even when I'm rebasing, I'll try to like do this or make a backup of my local folder. Like, you just never know just around some of these commands that you're passing it.
That's exactly
the best way to practice it. You got to do it by
error. It's as simple as creating a branch. Like, one of the things that I run into a lot, like when I talk to people who are coming from Subversion, is like, oh, I don't need branches. I don't use branches. And I was telling them, well, that's because using a branch in Subversion is like, you know, sticking a needle in your arm. It's painful, and so you stop doing it because it hurts. And so, and what I like to demo to people, like what a branch is in Git. It's literally like it adds one file with a SHA and a point. It's a pointer to a commit. So, do not be sparing. Do not be stingy with the branches. Just create a branch for every little thing. Hey, I want to try an experiment. Create a branch first so that you have a easy backup point. Mm-hmm. And because reflog's a little more challenging because you got to find it. But if you create a branch or a tag for every little point that you think is important, you can easily go back to it by name.
And reflog, although we're not going to get into the details here, it's one of the most powerful tools that you can have as somebody who's using Git when something goes sideways in your repo, to be able to go back and whether or not those commits are still included in your active code base, you're still able to go back and pull those back out. And
you don't lose code.
What I found recently, too, is I used to be a big stasher. So I would have some code, modifying stuff, I would just stash some code. And we were talking earlier, and Phil were like, oh, stashing code. Like, no one does that. And I'm like, well, I used to all the time. What I found mostly is whenever I want to stash something, and stash is like a temporary commit. You're not actually committing anything. It's kind of code lingering somewhere over here.
Purgatory.
Yeah, it's just over there. But what I find now is instead of stashing it, I'll just create a branch.
Yeah.
Those codes, and I can come back to master. So at least I have that history, and that stash just isn't somewhere around.
You know what I do? I just do a temporary commit. And then I do whatever I have to do. Then I come back, and then I continue to work, and then I amend the last commit.
So I actually have an alias for that. I call it WIP, or work in progress. So I just type git WIP, and it adds everything, and it commits it, and then
that's a good idea.
That's a good idea.
And then you can. I even have one git save. I have that will commit everything, and then also do the unreset so that it gets like. And then I know it's there, but. Like if I want to do, instead of doing git, you know, a lot of times people tell you, oh, you want to throw this away, work this way, just do git reset --hard. And I'm like, no. Because once you do that, that's gone. That you never committed that.
Yeah.
So not even reflog's going to save you this time.
Let's unpack that just a little bit, though.
I said a lot of words.
You said a lot of words there. And one of them that's actually another really powerful for anybody using git is alias. Yeah. And so we can work with the git commands, or we've got this option to do aliasing.
Yeah. And should I show alias real quick?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Okay, so if Mike.
It's not scary, it's just, it seems like it's something that's out there, and as soon as you do it once or twice, it's, you know, to create your own or even to use other people's, it's a great, like, there's great aliases that are out there that you can go and.
Yeah, in fact, I demoed it without realizing it earlier. So, like, for example, if you want to edit your config file, right, this is where you would store your aliases. I think it's something like git config --global -e to edit.
That's it.
And so I can never remember that, so I create an alias called git ec for edit config. And you can see that I have a lot of aliases here. Some of my aliases are pretty involved, and they actually build on other aliases. I want to talk about this one, be done. So you create a branch, you create some commits, you push it to GitHub, someone merges that commit, and now you're like, oh, great, that's been merged. So you type git be done, and what I do is I look at all the commits, all the branches that have been merged to master on the remote, and I just delete them locally and switch you back to master. I actually have a blog post. It's about git aliases for GitHub Flow. But let's look at a simple one, right? One of the most common ones you might see, what?
CO,
yeah, that's it. So Git checkout, you know, sometimes you just want to say, I just want to type CO for checkout, I want to type the checkout. Although, you know, with PoshGit, you type, you know, you just type CH and hit tab, it'll fill it for you. But amend is a good one, right? Commit dash A dash dash amend for amending to your current commit.
Yeah.
So I won't go too into it, but this is how you can add them, and this is I have a blog post that has some, but you can just search, and people have tons of blog posts. Really simple, but really powerful, and that way you can be pretend to be a Git master without actually knowing all the commands, because you're like, oh, I do this all the time. I'll just create an alias, and now, like me, I can't even remember that. I needed your help to open the config file, but now I just do my alias, so that works out well.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah, so getting back to when you have sensitive information, right? So what do? You, one thing I've done in the past, you check out to that commit where you're checking in the sensitive information, you commit from there, and then you rebase.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're done.
Well, if you haven't pushed it yet, that will work, right?
Yeah.
Because it's no longer in your history.
Well, you're going to have to push it later anyway.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're
going to
have
to force
roll
push
back,
if you have sensitive information, right?
So if the point being that if it's already been pushed, you should assume that key's already been compromised. So you should do that anyways, but you should change your passwords or keys immediately.
Yeah.
So, and we've probably said that 3 times already, but we want to emphasize.
Do it.
Yeah. It's like putting it on a billboard and then taking the billboard down. Like, you can't assume that nobody's seen it.
Yeah.
So taking a picture.
We have to put it there instead of that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I hope I didn't show any passwords there.
Yeah.
I got one. No.
So we have not pushed this video up yet, so we can rebase this video. So you know things have devolved when we're doing Git jokes. Is there any more topics we want to talk about? I think we've been going on for a while, so I think we could start wrapping up unless there's one more topic you guys want to talk about.
I think we're done.
Yeah, I think essentially.
I have no idea how long we've been talking.
Yeah, I think for me, when I found Git.
How about let's go last thoughts.
Last thoughts.
Okay.
Yeah. So I essentially use Git. We talked a lot about stashing, committing, using branches. I essentially use GitHub and Git itself like I use Gmail. I archive everything. I never delete. And that's what's important is I always have my history. I have all these branches. They're all there. I can always see what I've been working around with. And there's all these great tools that allow you to go back in time, go forward in time. So to me, never throw away code. Never have code that, for instance, I was working on this, but I'm not going to implement this feature. Put it in a branch somewhere. Stash it somewhere. Put it somewhere, because you never know when you're going to go back to it. So that's how I've been using, changed my workflow of using Git on these last few years. It's just always put that code somewhere. You never know when you're going to go back.
Yeah.
Okay, Git for me is enabler. You know, before source control was just a pain, and now it's a tool. It wasn't a tool before, right? Now it's a tool. I just remember one thing we could discuss that's very important and has helped me a lot, which is Git bisect.
I don't know. Yes.
That's such a time saver.
We absolutely need to talk about that.
Yeah. So what bisect does is. Imagine you have a bug, right? And you want to know how long you have this bug, for how long have you had it. So what you tell bisect is, well, I know it's between here and here, but I don't know where, right? So Git has an algorithm which it will start to.
And so here and here are two different commits
right,
in history. Okay.
Yeah, right. So, and then it will check out this one, and then you verify, oh, no, it's not here. Then it is going to. Breaking the meter, right? So is it here?
It does it binary search.
Yeah, so it goes binary search until it gives you, it's this commit created a bug. And if you can automate that.
Yeah.
So if you if you create a script and this script returns correctly, then there's no bug. And if it doesn't, then the bug's there. And then it's really simple. You just run the command and you wait. And you're like 15 seconds, 20 seconds. Here's the commit that caused the problem.
So the script you would write in that case would be something that exploits the bug. So it would.
Yeah. You could run a unit test, or you could run any script. You know, some search on the text, whatever. Mm. It doesn't matter as long as it returns zero or non-zero, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. So this has helped me a lot, and so that's what I was saying. As Git being a tool, right? The source control is a tool when you have Git. When you don't. It's a pain. So what I would say to people is go look for it, because it's not just your source control. It's much more than that.
One of the things that I think is important to make sure that we recognize and acknowledge is that when you move from project to project, there's going to be preferences on the team. And in some cases, there are people who prefer to do squashing down to commits that make sense, rather than squashing down to one commit. And when we have to be, I think, you know, agile enough as developers to not get our feelings hurt. If we go to Giovanni's repo and he's like, "Ah, I want you to squash it," and we can't feel bad about that. That's just we're going to follow the like those are procedural things and not technical things that we just need to do in order to fit in as a team.
I'm nice.
You're nice. there's a lot of ways to achieve the same result in Git, and it is. You're right. Saying it's a tool. It's like that crazy Swiss Army knife that's got like 950 things on it, right? And that's what it can feel like, but in reality, there's just a lot of simple things. Yep. And when you tweak the simple things, it looks like there's a lot of variances.
And that's actually the architecture of Git.
Is this Swiss Army knife?
So, and last thoughts?
Yeah, well, one of the best things I can recommend, and we already mentioned it, is to test everything before. Try to make another branch if you want to rebase or squash or something like that, because you never know. And even more when I say it, because I started using GitHub without really studying it, so I just started throwing comments and things like that, and that was a mess. So the best thing we can do is to study well the commands, know the limits and the boundaries, and then try everything before do it in production.
And use it as a conversation piece, you know, around all of this, working as a team. Working as a team, taking a piece of, you know, working as a team, I think that's one thing. We've all worked on projects. And conversations of what's best practice, how do you want it? You know, when a pull request comes in, start a dialogue. When an issue comes up, start a dialogue. Yeah. It's social coding.
Yeah. Cool. All right, well, the last thing I want to talk about is sometimes when you're rebasing history, right, like it's actually only parts of the file might have changes that are unrelated to each other. And so you can actually run a command called git add -p, and that will allow you to do what we call line commits, commit a portion of the file and one commit the other. You know, since I work for GitHub, I'm naturally going to show you that you can do this in, this is GitHub Desktop for Windows, and you can actually select hunks and say, I'm only going to commit this summary, but this summary, you know, this section is for a different change, so we'll commit this later. And then I could commit just that change, and you notice the icon there changes there. And so line commits is another tool that is a little more advanced for people. People are unfamiliar with it, but it allows you to really like just focus on your work and then at the end say, we'll sort it out then and say, oh, well, this change is one commit, this change should be in another. I can organize the work, commit it, and have a really nice history. Because things like git bisect are much better when you have a real concise history that where each commit really is a logical grouping.
Yeah.
And that makes tools like git bisect way more powerful. So on that note, I think I'd like to wrap up, and it's been really fun to talk to you guys about Git and GitHub and the various challenges and the ways we work differently even. So because as you pointed out, like there are many right ways to use Git, and a lot of times people will fight to the death for their right way, but ultimately it doesn't really matter. Like we're all getting the, you know, the same thing done. So
yeah.
Thank you, everyone. It's been fun talking to you, and I hope you enjoyed this presentation.
Oh, thanks.
Cheers.
Cheers.